Hello everyone and welcome back to the MTG Novels Project. MTG Novels Project is available both on YouTube and as a podcast version. Check the description for more details. A legal note. This is an unofficial audiobook with original content belonging to Wizards of the Coast. This content is covered under the 2017 Wizards of the Coast fan content policy. Listener discretion is advised. Today, we are continuing with Chapter 14 of Planeswalker by Lynn Abbey. It had happened before, in between worlds. A sensation of falling that lasts until Zansha opened her eyes and found herself looking at nothing familiar. Ah, awake at last. The voice was not quite a man's voice, yet deeper than most. Female voices, and quite melodious. Though Zansha suspected that the acid persona powered it, she could almost picture a Phyrexian with that voice, though this place wasn't Phyrexia. Not a whiff of glistening oil accompanied the voice. The air is quiet. There's music in the distance. Music such as might be made by the glass chimes or bells. Zansha remembered the wind crystal in another world. She realized that she was not in a bedroom, not in a building of any sort. The wall to her left and the ceiling above were a shallow, wind-eroded cave. Elsewhere, the world was grass. Grass with a woman's voice? Where am I? How did I get here? Urza! Where's Urza? We were together in the ice fighting the Phyrexians. She popped herself up on one elbow. I had to find him. She was dizzy. Zansha was rarely dizzy. As you were. By its tone, the voice was accustomed to obedience. Zansha laid flat and returned to her first question. Where am I? You are here. You're being careful. There's nothing more you need to know. She'd been many places, picked up so many languages. Zansha had to stay very still, listening to her thoughts and memories before she could be sure she did not know the language she was speaking. It was simply there in her mind, implanted rather than acquired by listening. A rather reason to think of Phyrexia. Zansha considered it unlucky to think of Phyrexia once before breakfast, and here she thought of it three times. She realized she was very hungry. If I'm being cared for, I'd like something to eat, if you please. Urza said manners were important among strangers, especially when one was at a stranger's mercy. Of course, he rarely bothered with such niceties. With his power, Urza was never at a stranger's mercy. Zansha remembered the turtles, the Phyrexians they'd been fighting before what? She couldn't remember how the skirmish had ended, only a bright light in the sense that she'd been falling for a long time before she woke up here, wherever here was. The air will sustain you, the voice said. You do not need to fill yourself with death. Another thought of Phyrexia, where complete Phyrexians neither ate nor breathed, but were sustained by glistening oil. I need food. I'll hunt it myself. You'll do no such thing. Zansha pushed herself in a sitting position, got a first look at the voice. A tall woman, thin through the body, even thinner through the face. Her eyes were gray, her hair was pale gold, and her lips were a tight, disapproving line beneath a large but narrow nose. She seemed young, at least to Zansha. It seemed as well that she had never smiled or laughed. Who are you? Zansha asked, though what are you was the question foremost in her mind. The multiverse might well contain an infinite number of worlds, but it had no more than 20 of sentient types. If Zansha followed Urza's example and discarded those types that, though clearly sentient, were also completely feral and without the hope of civilization, only nearly 40, if she followed her own inclination to regard men and women of every type as distinct species. Urza's type was the most common, and with the arrogance of the clear majority, he called himself simply a man, whether it were elf men or dwarf men or gremlin men. His wife, Caleb and Grub, had been a wolf man and a very beautiful woman. When Zansha had asked Urza for a single word that united men and women, as elves united elf men and elf women, he'd answered mankind, which seemed to her a better way of uniting all the men, common and rare, rather than common men with their wives and daughters. When she demanded a better word, Urza had smiled and walked away. Urza wondered what he'd make of the woman standing in front of her. Wonder sparked a hope he was still alive, and that he'd find him here. But another thought crowded crowded Urza from Zancha's mind. She and the stranger were both dressed in long white gowns. Where had her clothes gone? Her sword? Her knives? The shoulder sack filled with stew and treasure. Except for the gown, Zancha was naked. She wondered if the stern-faced woman was naked. If she really was a woman after all. Her voice was quite deep, and her breasts were a far cry from generous. That was very nearly a fifth Phyrexian thought before breakfast, and since the stranger had given no indication that she was going to answer any of her questions, Zancha got to her feet under her and pushed herself upright. Another bout of dizziness left her grateful for the nearby rock. She rested with her back against a stone and took a measure of the world where she had awakened. It was a golden place of rolling hills and rippling grasses, all caught in the afterglow of a brilliant sunset. With clear air and layers upon layers of clouds overhead, it was difficult, though, to discern where west lay. Urza explained to her in her earliest days, wherever man dwelt, the sun set in the west and rose in the east. In all corners, the horizon was marked with the dazzling amber peaks that might have been mountains or might have been clouds. It was achingly beautiful and almost as strange. On impulse, Zancha looked for her shadow and found it huddled close by her feet, where she expected to find it at high noon. Curiosity became suspicion that got the better of her. Does this world mark time by the sun? She asked with a scowl, a sixth Phyrexian thought. Or do you live in a mortal sunset? The stranger blew back and seemed almost somehow tower. We think of it as sunrise. Does the sun ever get risen? Our Lady has created all that you see. Each cloud, each breeze, each stone, each tree and blade of grass. She had created them all with a moment of great beauty. There's peace here. No need for change. Zancha let out a long, disbelieving breath. Waste not, want not. Exactly, the stranger replied. So Zancha had not intended the Phyrexian maxim as a compliment. Are we alone? No. Where are the others? Not here. Zancha's dizziness had passed. If there were others elsewhere, she was ready to look for them. She took a deep breath, opened her mouth, and yawned. Not here, the woman repeated, an emphatic command this time. Listen and obey, the vat priest had told Zancha in the beginning, and despite the passage of time, she still found it difficult to disobey, especially when the cyst felt heavy in her gut, heavy and oddly unreliable. She swallowed the lump that was part an emerging sphere, in part rising panic. How did I get here? I don't know. How long have I been here? Since you arrived. Where am I? Where you are? Panic surged again. This time, Zancha couldn't fight it down. What manner of world is this? She shouted. The sun doesn't rise or set. You give me answers that aren't answers. Is this Phyrexia? Is that it? Have I been brought back to Phyrexia? The stranger blinked but said nothing. Can I leave? Is Urza here? Can I find Urza? More silence. Zancha wanted to run. She was lucky she could walk. Her legs had become the lethargic stranger. Every step required concentration, calculation, and brown faith as she transferred weight from one foot to another. After 10 strides, Zancha was panted and needed rest. She didn't dare sit down for fear she wouldn't have the strength to stand up again. So she was bent from the hips and kept balancing by bracing clammy, shaking hands on her gown-covered knees. The stranger wasn't following her. Zancha pulled herself erect and started walking again. She took nearly 20 cautious steps before her strength gave out. The stranger hadn't moved at all. Urza! Zancha thought his name with the same precision she used with her mnemonic when she yawned. Urza had never admitted that he was open to her thoughts, but he'd never denied it either. Urza, I'm in a strange place. Nothing is all wrong, but it's all right either, and I'm not myself. If you're nearby. She stopped short of begging or pleading. If he had survived the last battle, and Zancha was unwilling to believe she had outlived Urza the Artificer, and she certainly could have gotten here on her own. If Urza wasn't busy with problems of her own, then he would come. Until then, she would walk. The heaviness and lethargy didn't go away as the dizziness had, but Zancha became accustomed to them, as she would have been accustomed to the rise and fall of a boat's deck. Zancha might not yet know where she was or where she was going, but when she looked over her shoulder, she'd left a clean line through the ripe grass. The stranger had told her at least one truth. The air was enough. Xana forgot her hover and never became thirsty, even though she worked up against considerable stress, sweat, forcing herself across the hills. Up and down and up again. Eventually, Xana lost sight of the stranger and the rock where she'd awakened. There were other rocks along her chosen path, all dun-colored and eroded into curves that were the same, yet also unique. Once and only once, Xana saw a bush and veered off her path to examine it. The bush was shoulder height and sprawling. Its leaves were tiny but intensely green, the first green she'd found on this sunset-colored world. The pale bells clustered on inner branches. Xana considered picking a handful, then noticed the thorns too, a lot of them, and each as long as her thumb. The stranger had been appalled when she'd mentioned hunting for her food, as if nothing here needed anything more than the air to survive. But if that were true, then why the thorns, and why were there bears only on the inner branches? The stranger had spoken of a lady and the creation and perfection. Someone, somewhere, was telling lies. Xana left the bears alone. She rejoined her trail through the grass. If there were predators, they'd have no trouble finding her. The golden grass was ripe and brittle. She left a wake of broken stalks and wished she still had her sword, or at least a knife. Aside from the stranger, Xana had seen nothing living that wasn't also rooted in the ground. No birds or animals, not even an insect. A place that had berries should have insects. Even Phyrexia had insects. Xana walked until her body told her it was time to sleep. How long she'd walked or how far were unquestionable questions. She made herself a grass mattress beside another rock, because habit said a rock provided more shelter than open grass. If the stranger could be believed, night never fell. The air wouldn't turn cold. There was no reason to not sleep soundly. But Xana didn't trust the stranger. She kept her eyes closed long enough for the glass beneath her to make her impressions in her skin, and after a handful of failed naps, she started walking again. If walking and fitfully napping were a day, then Xana walked for 3 days before she came upon a familiar stranger waiting beside a weathered rock. She remembered that she herself had been one of the 1,000 identical newts. Xana wasn't sure it was the same stranger. The rock was the same, the wake of the broken grass was nearby. The stranger had moved. She was sitting rather than standing, and she was aware that Xana had returned, following her closely with her gray eyes, but she did not speak. Silence raised until Xana couldn't bear it. "You said there were others. Where? How can I find them?" "You can't." "Why not? How big is this world? What happened to me? Did I trick myself into walking in a circle? Answer me. Answer my questions. Is this some sort of punishment?" "Matters be damned," Xana threatened the seated woman with her fist. "Is this Phyrexia? Are you some kind of new priest?" The woman's expression froze between shock and disdain. She blinked, but her gray eyes didn't flash drools as Urza would have done. Nor did she raise any other kind of defense. Yet Xana backed away, lowering her arms and clenching her hands. "So you can control yourself. Can you learn? Can you sit and wait?" Xana had learned harder lessons than sitting opposite an enigmatic stranger, though few that seemed more useless. Other than the slow shifting cloud layers, the occasional rippling of the grass and the gray-eyed woman, there's nothing to look at, nothing to occupy Xana's thoughts. And if the goal were self-reflection... "Urza said that I have no imagination," Xana explained, when her legs had begun to twitch so badly she had to get up and walk around the rock a few times. "My mind is empty. I can't see myself without a mirror. It's because I'm Phyrexian." "Lies," the stranger said without looking up. "Lies," Xana retorted, ready for an argument, ready for anything that would cut the boarding. "You're a fine one to complain about lies." But the stranger didn't take Xana's bait, and Xana returned to her chosen place. Days were longer beside the rock. Sitting was less strenuous than walking, and despite her suspicions, Xana slept soundly with the stranger nearby. They had a conversational breakthrough on the fourth day of unrelenting boredom, when a line of black dots appeared beneath the close cloud layer. "The others?" Xana asked. She was sorted off in the sphere earlier days and over her companion's objections, if the cysts weren't still churning and awkward in her gut. The stranger stood up at first, since Xana had returned from her walk. Gray eyes wrapped in the moving specks, she walked in the unbroken grass. She reached out towards them with both arms, stretching to the fingertips, but the specks moved on. Her arms fell, and she returned to Zancha, all sagging shoulders and weariness. If this is the world without night, it finally dawned on Zancha that she might have leapt to the wrong confusion. How long have you been here? A friend's concern rather than a prisoner's accusation. I came with you. Still a circular answer, but the tone had been less aloof. Zancha persisted. How long ago is that? How much time has passed since we were both here? Time cannot be cut and measured. As long as we've been sitting here, as long as I stood under the rock, longer than that or as long. Stranger bird her thighs, slipped her hands. Longer. Yes, much longer. Longer than you expected? Yet very much longer. The air sustains us, but otherwise we've been forgotten. More forebrows, more silence. But the language implanted into her mind had words for time and forgetting. Meaning words came first. The stranger had to understand the question. Why are you both here, inside beside this rock and forgotten? What happened? The angels found you and another. Urza. I was with Urza. With another not like you. His eyes see everything. Zancha slumps back against the rock. Raw fear draining down her spine. Urza. She's been found with Urza. Everything would be resolved in a matter of time. What happened to Urza? The angels brought you both to the lady's palace. The lady held on to Urza. But you're not like Urza. She said she could do nothing with you, and you would die. Danae does not look upon death. I was stuck out here to die, and you were put here to watch me until I did. But I didn't, so we're both stuck, is that it? We will wait. For what? The palace. Zancha pressed her hands over her mouth, lest her temper escape. A newt, she told herself. The gray-eyed stranger was a newt. She listened, she obeyed. She had no imagination, and she didn't know how to leap from one thought to another. Zancha herself had been like that, until Gix had come to the first sphere. Probed her mind and made her defend herself, changing her forever. Zancha had no intention of invading the stranger's privacy. She didn't even have the ability, even if she had the intuition. All she wanted was the answer that would unite her with Urza. And if her questions changed the stranger, did that make Zancha herself another Gix? No, she sighed and lowered her hands. She would not have poured acid down the firm wall to Gix's grave if he'd done nothing more than awaken her self-awareness. What if we didn't wait? Zancha asked with enthusiasm of a conspirer in pursuit of a partner. What if we went to the palace ourselves? We can't. Why not? Urza gave me a gift once. If you tell me where the palace is, I can take us both there. No. Impossible. We shouldn't be speaking of this. I shouldn't be speaking with you at all. The lady herself could do nothing with you. Enough. We will wait. In perfect silence. Stranger bowed her head and folded her hands in her laps. Her lips moved rapidly as she recited something. Zancha guessed a prayer to herself. No matter. The wall had been breached. Zancha was a conspirator in search of a partner. She had nothing to do but plan her attack. Within 2 days she had the stranger's name. Sasina, in a certainty that Sasina considers herself a woman. 2 days more, and he had the name of Lady Serena, or Lady Sarah, rather. After that, it was easy enough to keep Sasina talking, although the sad truth was Sasina knew more about Sarah's world than Zancha had known about Phyrexia when Urza first rescued her. Sasina was a sister of Sarah, one of the many women who served the palace, laid in her palace. If Zancha had not walked for 3 days straight and found herself back where she'd started, she would have laughed aloud when Sosina described Sarah's palace as a wondrous island, where she and Sosina sat in exile. And when she had the thought of a floating island in her mind, Zancha could see many of the darker clouds around them weren't clouds at all, but miniature worlds of grass and stone. The others, Sasina had mentioned, were angels, wing folk, who did Sarah's bidding from their palace. Angels had found Urza and Zancha, though Sasina didn't know where, and angels had brought Zancha and Sasina to their exile island, because the sisters of Sarah were never to leave the floating palace on their own. The angels' wings were like Urza's cyst. The idea of having an artifact reside permanently in your stomach appalled Sasina so much that they stopped talking for 3 full days. Nor were the wings added some floating island equivalent of the feint of flesh. That notion roused Sosina's anger. Angels, she informed Zancha panically, are born. Here we are all born. The lady reveres life. She would not even consider that the feign filth, waste, death. No wonder. No wonder the lady said you could not be helped. I will have nothing more to do with you. Nothing at all. Sosina couldn't keep her vow. The woman who sat silently for days on end would not resist telling Zancha in great detail about the perfect way in which the lady raised her realm's children. Births, it seems, were rare. Incipient parents dwelt in the palace under the lady's immediate care, and their precious children, once they were born and weaned, went to the nursery, where the lady personally undertook their education. Sosina's voice thickened with nostalgia as she described the transal cloister where she'd learned the arts of meditation and service. Privately, Zancha thought Lady Sarah's nursery sounded as grim as the feign of flesh, but she kept those new thoughts to herself, smiling politely, even wistfully, at each new revelation. On the 20th day, on the 20th day of four smiles, Sanchez's conspiratorial campaign achieved its greatest victory when Sosina confessed that she was in love, perfectly internally, with one of her nursery peers, an angel. Is that permitted? Sanchez interrupted before she had the wit to censor herself. The notion of love fascinated her, and spending most of her life in Urza's shadow, or hiding her ununiformed flesh beneath a young woman's clothes, she'd have very little opportunity to learn love secrets. You don't have wings. Sansa's curiosity was ill-timed and rude. It jeopardized everything she'd gained through the long days of patient questioning, but it was sincere. On worlds where mankind lived side by side with elves or dwarves or other sentients, compliance was rarely encouraged, more frequently forbidden. She hardly expected love between the sisters of Sarah, and winged angels to flourish in a place where the mere parents of the sun would have spoiled the perfection of the sunrise. But Sosina surprised Zancha with a fierce blush that stretched from the color of her white gown into her pale gold wings. Wings, Sosina explained. I have nothing to do with it. Alive, ever, Zancha adored one. We are all born the same, raised the question. Our parentage is not important to Lady Sarah. We are all equal in her service. She encourages us to cherish each other openly and to follow our hearts, not our eyes, when we declare our true love. More lies, though Sosina's passion was real. Kenidurum, Kenidurin, Kenidurn, Kenidurn. Is a paragon, she confided in a whisper. No one served the lady with more bravery and vigor. He has examined every aspect of his being and cast out all trace memories of imperfection. There is not one mode of him that isn't pure and devoted to duty. He stands above all the other angels, and no one else would fault him if he were proud. But it isn't. Kenidurn has embraced building. There isn't a woman alive who wouldn't exchange a token with him, but it was given his to him. Sosina removed her veil and swept her hair aside, revealing a golden earring in the lobe of her left ear. Beautiful. An honor above all others, Zancha agreed, trying to intimidate Sosina's lofty tone, while she watched, racked her mind for a way to turn this latest revelation toward a reunion with Urza and escape from Sarah's too perfect realm. It must be difficult for you to be apart from him. You can't know what he's doing, or where, if something had happened to him. You wouldn't know, and well, if he's giving you his token, it's not like they would have forgotten. So you have to think he's looking for you, if he can. Santa smiled a very Phyrexian face. Urza would disapprove, although there was no reason for him to ever know. Of course, sometimes even paragons get distracted. Several long moments of nervous feeling passed before Sosrina said, "We have our duties. We both love City Lady Freyev. Good enough." Several long moments of nervous fiddling passed before Cecina. "We all have our duties. We both serve the lady. Everyone serves the ladies first and foremost." She sat up straight and looked very uncomfortable. "I have strayed from the path. We will speak of these things no more. But the damage had been done. Cecina had lost the ability to stare endlessly at nothing. She watched the clouds. Santa supposed Cecina was looking for angels and hoped for her own selfish reasons that they appeared. In the end, though, it wasn't angels that got them moving. When she learned that Sarah's realm was comprised of islands drifted in a cloudy sea, Santa had quickly realized that each island had its own rhythm and path. With a persistent ache in her stomach, Santa wasn't tempted to yawn at the sphere and become her own island, but she thought she could hop from one island to another if a more interesting one drifted near. She dismissed the possibility of collision between two of the lady's islands as an unimaginable imperfection until the ground buckled beneath them. One moment, Zansha and Cecina were lying flat, clinging to the grass roots, and the next they were both thrown into the air, while land beneath shattered. For an instant, or hesitation, Zansha yawned and grabbed Cecina's ankle. The sister was slow to release its power, and the sphere, when it finally emerged, was midnight black. Thank you for listening to Chapter 14 of Planeswalker. Please like, subscribe, and follow on YouTube and your chosen podcast platform.